Well, we've come to our last message in our series on John's Gospel. So please come with me to the reading which we had, and we're going to look at John 21 and verses 20 to 25. We stand on the other side of the cross. Christ has died, Christ is risen, and for the third time he meets with his disciples. But as we've seen, there's unfinished business. Peter's fallen. The Lord's right-hand man has denied him three times. But as we saw, Peter is restored. Each time Peter is asked, do you love me? He confesses his love for Christ, and then Christ commands him to shepherd his flock, his people, the church. But that's not all, because as we saw last time, when Peter is old, he is to glorify God by dying a martyr's death. Verse 18, most assuredly I say to you, when you were younger, you girded yourself, you dressed yourself and walked where you wished. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and another will gird you and carry you where you do not wish. This he spoke, signifying by what death he would glorify God. And when he had spoken this, he said to him, follow me. Peter once promised, Lord, I'm ready to go with you to death. Well, says Jesus, that promise will be redeemed in full. Following Jesus will mean a daily cross and an ultimate cross, a life of sacrifice and an ultimate sacrifice, which brings us now to verses 20 to 25. And we have two things to say. The first one is by far the longest, so don't be alarmed, they're not of equal length. Two things. Point number one, what is that to you? Now, Jesus and Peter have been talking. It's serious stuff. Jesus says to Peter, do you love me? He commissions him, he commands him, feed my sheep, tend my sheep, feed my lambs. He then speaks to them in great solemnity, verse 18, most assuredly I say to you. It's toe to toe, face to face, eye to eye. And then Jesus' last words, follow me. But now Peter turns round. He takes his eyes off Jesus. He turns round to see John. Peter and John, the senior disciples, talking together at the Last Supper, together in the courtyard of the high priest. Together they run to the empty tomb. And they've been together this very morning. Peter and John. John and Peter. Then Peter, turning round, saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following, who also leaned on his breast at the supper and said, Lord, who is it? Who is the one who betrays you? Peter, seeing him, said to Jesus, but Lord, what about this man? It's a very natural question, isn't it? Lord, what's going to happen to John? Is he to care for your flock? Is he to die a martyr's death? But Lord, what about this man? It's a fair question. Or is it? Look at Jesus' reply. Jesus said to him, if I will that he remain till I come, what is that to you? You follow me. Why doesn't Christ answer Peter? Why doesn't he tell him what's going to happen to John? Well, think about it. Think of the scene. Think about what's just been taking place. Peter has just been restored. He's just confessed his love for Christ. He's just been given the greatest commission of them all. He's to care for God's people. And he's just been told that he's to be crucified. And Christ couldn't make it more solemn, could he? Verse 18, he says, most assuredly. Some translations have truly, truly. He's saying, I solemnly declare. Most assuredly, I say to you, when you were younger, you dressed yourself, you walked where you wished. When you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and another will gird you and carry you where you do not wish. Jesus has just told him that the strong man will be led helpless. The hands have just been pulling that immense catch of fish. They're going to be stretched out and tied to a crossbeam. The man who earlier threw on his outer garment is going to be dressed by another. It'll probably be a chain put round his waist. And the man who could go where he chose because no one ever got in Peter's way He's going to have to submit to the will of others. And they'll take him where he doesn't want to go, to a place of execution, to be crucified. Peter, for you, a crown of martyrdom. Most assuredly, pick up the atmosphere of what's taking place. And then you see just how out of place Peter's question is. Peter, haven't you heard what I've just been saying? Peter, this of all times is the time to stop and think and reflect and pray. Peter, haven't you got enough on your plate? Haven't you got enough to think of? Without wondering what's going to be happening to John. Jesus replies very straight. Jesus said to him, if I will that he remain till I come, what is that to you? You follow me. Peter, it's not for you to be nosing around in the lives of others. What is or isn't going to be happening to John? Look to your front. Follow me. It's not for you to know my plans for John. Because you're not John, you're Peter. You've got enough to do. So get on with it. You follow me. Verse 23, then the saying went out among the brethren that this disciple would not die. Yet Jesus said to him that he would, yet Jesus did not say to him that he would not die, but if I will that he remains till I come, what is that to you? This is the disciple who testifies of these things and wrote these things, and we know that his testimony is true. John's obviously writing to quash a popular rumor when Jesus said, if I will that he remain till I come. Some people took it to mean that while Peter will die, John would live on until Christ returned. Well, says John, Jesus didn't say that. He wasn't making a prediction about John. He was simply telling Peter to mind his own business. You've been at the dinner table. It's been a lovely meal. Dad speaks to his son. He speaks to David. He says, David, would you clear the table? And David turned to his brother Jonathan and says, yeah, well, what about him? And Dad says, well, look, if I will that he stands on his head and does acrobatics on the table, what's that to you? You clear the table. Does Dad mean that actually afterwards he does want Jonathan to stand and do some acrobatics on the table? It's just a figure of speech, isn't it? Never mind what Jonathan's going to be doing. You know what you should be doing, so get on and clear the table. Peter, you have your calling. It's enough. I've told you to follow me. So don't turn round. Don't forget everything I've just been talking about. Don't get distracted. Never mind what John's going to be doing. Don't wonder whether you've got the rough end of it, because you're the one who's going to be crucified. What is that to you? You follow me. And Christian friends, we all do a Peter, don't we? Jesus says, follow me. But what do? I turn round. I say, yeah, but Lord, what about this man? And I take my eyes off Jesus and I start looking at somebody else. And when I start looking at somebody else, Lord, they're more gifted than me. They're more appreciated than me. They've got bigger opportunities to serve than I have. Jesus says, what is that to you? You follow me. But Lord, she's married. She has children. She doesn't have the sort of upsets that I have. What is that to you? You follow me. Yeah, but Lord, their children are converted. And their family life is so much easier than ours. And they really have got a happy marriage. What is that to you? You follow me. But Lord, they have so many friends. And I feel alone. And their family are so supportive. And mine aren't. And actually, I've just had one trouble after another trouble, one heartache after another heartache. I feel that life for me is overwhelming. And when I look at them, what is that to you? You follow me. Yeah, but I have money worries. And I have health problems compared to them. And I lack assurance, and they seem to be filled with joy. What is that to you? You follow me. But Lord, their building, their church has a better building and better facilities than our church. And their members have got more flair. And they've seen more blessing. What is that to you? You follow me. Christian friends, do you see? We're not to turn round. We're not to say, but what about this man? We're not to see somebody else and say, but Lord. Because Peter is not John, and John is not Peter. And Jeff is not Gerard, and Gerard is not Jeff. And Doreen is not Mandy, and Mandy is not Doreen. And you're not them, and they're not you. And Amiens Park Chapel is not Grace Church Templegammon, and Grace Church Templegammon is not Amiens Park Chapel. And my calling is not his calling. And their story is not my story. But we do have a calling. And we do have a story. And Jesus says, get on with it. What is that to you? You follow me. But I want to push this a bit further. It's been a family day. It's been a lovely day. It's getting late. Mum and Dad say to the youngest child, it's time for bed. And what does the youngest child always say? Yeah, but what about, and they point to their brothers and sisters, don't they? Because the kid feels that by being packed off to bed first, that somehow they're missing out. And we all feel that, don't we? We look at other believers, we take our eyes off the Lord, and we somehow feel, but Lord, what about, and we feel that we're missing out. Maybe that we're getting second best. Lord, if only things were different. Yes, like Peter, we're turning round. Like Peter, we take our eyes off Jesus. Like Peter, we're in danger of forgetting everything that Jesus has just been saying to us. Like Peter, we're in danger of forgetting completely the calling which is unique and given to us. And like Peter, we're in danger of getting distracted by other people's stories. And Christ has to rebuke us, bring us back. What's that to you? Mind your own business. You follow me. Christian friend, are you missing out? Is the life that you're living now, in the circumstances that you have now, and everything that goes with it, is it second best? Have you seen the film The Conqueror? A 1956 epic in cinema scope. And it's starring John Wayne as the Mongol Emperor Genghis Khan. Now, for a certain sort of age, you know who John Wayne is. If you don't know, well, who is John Wayne? Well, he's an actor famous in westerns. He was the good guy, and he always sorted out the bad guys. And he was famous in war films. And he was apparently immune to bullets and bombs. He was such a large, slow-moving target. Somehow German bullets and Japanese bullets never could hit him, and he won the war single-handed. John Wayne. But John Wayne plays Genghis Khan. Who's Genghis Khan? Well, he was a 12th, 13th century warrior. He united the nomadic tribes of Northeast Asia. He shaped them into a formidable professional army, and then he set about conquering a huge land empire. It was absolutely enormous. So by the time of his death, it stretched from the Yellow Sea in the east to the Caspian Sea in the west. It's huge. It covers China, India, southern Russia, enormous empire. Genghis Khan, extraordinary man. A man of genius. A vast empire. It's a name that we still know today, don't we? Genghis Khan. And he's played by John Wayne. And if you see the film, they gave him a fake tan. And they gave John Wayne a drooping moustache, a bit like a sort of Mexican moustache. And they gave him a pointy hat. And they gave him a sword. And yet for all that, he looks and walks and sounds like John Wayne. He just looks like a cowboy. Just looks like a US Marine. And it was a monumental miscast. Someone made a big mistake. Does God make mistakes in casting? Should Peter actually be playing John? And should John actually be playing Peter? Does God make those sort of mistakes that you've got the wrong part? Christian friend, has God miscast you? Are you living the wrong life? You should be having what they've got. You should be doing what they're doing. Have you got the wrong body? The wrong face? The wrong parents? The wrong upbringing? The wrong testimony? The wrong gifts? The wrong experiences? Maybe you're married to the wrong person? You've got the wrong calling? You've got the wrong children? You've got the wrong job? You're living in the wrong place? Has God made a mistake? Are you somehow missing out? All the actions taking place somewhere else. And you've been packed off to bed early and you're just missing out. Are you on plan B? Is this second best? Lord, if only things were different. Has the Lord miscast you? What does he say to Peter? What's the last thing he says to Peter? He says, follow me. Has the Lord miscast you? Not if you follow him. What is that to you? You follow me. And look where following Jesus will lead Peter. Most assuredly, I say to you, when you were younger, you girded yourself, you walked where you wished. But when you're old, you'll stretch out your hands, and another will gird you and carry you where you do not wish. This he spoke, signifying by what death he would glorify God. Peter's to follow Jesus. And the Lord will lead Peter where he doesn't want to go. He will lead Peter where he doesn't choose to go. And yet for all that, it's the Lord's will for Peter. So if that's true of Peter, why should I think it's any different for me? What if the Lord is leading me where I don't want to go? Where I wouldn't choose to go? Why, if he's doing that, should I think this is plan B? The Lord will lead Peter to a cross. Think about that. He's leading him to a slow, shameful, agonizing death. Because by that death he will glorify God. So if it's true of Peter, why shouldn't it be true for me? What if the Lord calls me to take up my cross? To daily pain self to please Christ. To daily die to self and all my ambitions. And to stand at the graveside of all my hopes and dreams. If it be that I might glorify God. Why should I think I've been miscast? Maybe the real problem, Christian friend, is that I've been turning round. Verse 20, then Peter turning round. If he's turning round, he stopped looking at Jesus. Turning round saw John. Maybe the real problem is that I've taken my eyes off Jesus. Maybe the real problem is that I'm not doing what he's given to me to do today. Peter has plenty to do, doesn't he, without worrying about John. And Christian friend, you have plenty, yes? Without saying, yeah, but Lord, hang on a minute, whoa, what? And maybe, Christian friend, the real problem is that is that God's glory weighs too lightly upon me. Peter goes to a cross that he might glorify God. My life is not about me. My life is about him. My life is not my story in which God plays a part, or even God plays the most important part, or even God plays the leading part. My life is not about me. It's not my story. It's his story. It's all about his glory. This he spoke, signifying by what death he would glorify God. Maybe that weighs too lightly upon me, that I'm here to glorify God. That's why I'm here. And if it be that I glorify God, if it be that I die a slow, shameful, agonizing death, you see, Christian friend, if I look for happiness by God keeping to my script, and when God goes off message, I say, yeah, but what about, then I will be profoundly unhappy. But if I don't aim for happiness, if I aim just to please him, to follow him, to walk with him, to say, oh Lord, anything, if I may glorify you, after all that you've done for me, my life is yours. Do what you will with it. It's for your pleasure, your glory. It's your story. I'm happy just to have a walk-on part, just to say my one line, if it be that they see you. Well, then, says Peter, as he writes to in his first letter, then we'll rejoice with joy inexpressible and full of glory. And we find the life of heaven already is pouring into our souls. Which is why Jesus' rebuke is kind. You read that when Jesus says, if I will, then you remain till I come. What is that to you? It's a great kindness. And for those who hear his rebuke, it's a happy, happy, happy rebuke. Have you heard the voice of Jesus answering all your discontent? Christian friend, are you a discontented Christian tonight? Are you a bitter Christian tonight? Has God miscast you? Are you living a life, a role that you, as far as you're concerned, you should never be living? Your answer is not to brood on it. It's not to say, but Lord. It's not to turn away. To look to Jesus, to love him, to live for him, to follow him. Frieda reminded me of a song. She wrote it down for me. There's a work for Jesus ready at your hand. 'Tis a task the Master just for you has planned. Haste to do his bidding. Yield him service true. There's a work for Jesus. None but you can do. What is that to you? You follow me. Well, much more briefly now, point number two. John concludes his gospel. Verse 24, this is a disciple who testifies of these things and wrote these things, and we know this testimony is true. And also many other things that Jesus did, which, if they were written one by one, I suppose that even the world itself could not contain the books that would be written. So John's testimony is true, and John's testimony is selective. His gospel is just about 20 days in the life of Jesus. Amazing, isn't it? Just 20 days. If he recorded everything that Jesus did, if you've written it down one by one and given each episode the weight and significance that would be its due, it's his job. Well, I don't know if the whole world itself might not be big enough to contain all the books that could be written. Is John exaggerating? Or maybe John's a man of his time. No, books in those days were scrolls. And if you write down all the scrolls, you know, and if you had the sort of understanding today of the capacity we have for storage and what you can put on a disk and so on, maybe he wouldn't have made that sort of claim. Or maybe John's not exaggerating. The problem actually is not a technical one. The issue is Jesus himself. And there are also many other things that Jesus did. You see, how does John begin his gospel? He begins it with these words. He says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." In the beginning was the Word. So before anything was made, there was God. And there was the Word. And they were together. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. Literally, towards God. So there was God, and there was the Word. There were two selves, face to face, equals. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. So this one who was in the beginning, who was with God, face to face with God, is himself God. He was in the beginning with God, and all things were made through him, and without him nothing was made that was made. So who is this uncreated Word? Who is God's equal? Who is himself God? And through whom everything was made. Well, John says, "And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth." Who is the Word? It's the very same who walked this earth and lived among us. And Jesus is his name. Can you see my thoughts? But I make my thoughts visible when I speak. I express my thoughts through my word. No one has seen God at any time. The only begotten Son who is in the bosom of the Father, he has declared him. Can you see God? Can you see the Father? No, he's invisible. But he is expressed. The invisible is made visible through the Word. The only begotten Son who is in the bosom of the Father, he has declared him. Jesus is the Word. And now you can begin to see John's problem. How can you do justice to God becoming a man and living among us? Take the creation. Galaxies, stars, the sun, oceans, forests, mountains, lions, butterflies, elephants. Could you fill the world with all the books that could be written? But how do you put down in words the one through whom everything was made? Take things we enjoy. Food, sport, music, family, life. Could you fill the whole world with all the books that could be written? Another thing, would you bother to read them? We're restless, aren't we? Even life at its best doesn't satisfy. The psalmist writes, "All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, or the ear its fill of hearing." But how can you put down in words the one who is himself life? Who says to the crowds, "Eat this bread and you'll get hungry again. But I am the bread of life. He who comes to me shall never hunger, and he who believes in me shall never thirst." Or take life's big questions. Who am I? Why am I here? What's the meaning of life? Why is there suffering? What happens when I die? Does God exist? Again, could you fill the world with all the books that could be written? Yet if I read them, would I be any nearer an answer? We all have a sense, don't we? There's a dimension to life. If only I could find it. There's a sort of hole. If only I could fill it. There's got to be something that makes sense of it all. But how do you put down in words the one who is the answer to all those questions? Who says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. And my friend, take those things that mess us up. You know, it's not putting the can, is it, in the wrong recycling bin. It's the things that I do. It's the bad things that I do. It's the things that leave me feeling guilty, unclean, ashamed. It's that sense that one day all those things are going to catch up with me. The fact I go through this world and there's a sense of lostness that I can't get away from is that old Negro spiritual, isn't there? I feel like a motherless child, a long way from home. We all understand that. Or as I get older, the unexpected begins to happen to me. I look at my life and think, was this all I've achieved? Is this all my life counts for? Is this it? Could you fill the world with all the books that could be written to try and iron out and sort out those questions? But which of them would speak of God's Son? Which of them would speak of the Word, the very expression of God Himself, the one who came into this world, not to condemn the world, but the world through Him might be saved? It says, John, I've just given you 20 days. 20 days. You could fill the world, you could fill the universe, you could fill more than all could be written. God contracted to a span, incomprehensibly made man. But I tell you what you need to know. I will tell you of the Jesus who went to a cross to suffer and bleed and die. Not for anything he'd done, but because we're the ones who've messed up. We're the ones who've walked out on God. To go to that cross and die the punishing death I deserve to die. For Christ suffered for sins, the just for the unjust, that he might bring us to God. So that guilty, helpless, lost, wondering which way to turn, what's it all about, I might fall upon his kind arms and cry, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. And that I might enjoy peace with God. That the life I've messed up, he might give me a new life, a new beginning. And the promise of heaven itself. A life that will never be ordinary again. Because I follow an extraordinary Lord. And it isn't religion. Oh, save us from religion. It's the real thing. It says, John, this gospel, see, I've told you. I've told you everything you need to know. He says a little bit earlier, doesn't he? He says in chapter 20, verse 30, truly Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written, that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name. It's what you need to know. So as we close, will you hear the voice of Jesus now? On the last day, that great day of the feast, Jesus stood and cried out, saying, if anyone thirsts, are you listening? Are you listening? If anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink. Did you hear that? To a thirsty world that has no answers. In a world for which there is the making of books, there is no end. You could fill the world with things that could be written, but they won't satisfy. And maybe that's why you've even given up looking. To a thirsty world, Jesus says, come to me and drink. And then he adds, he who believes in me, as the scripture has said, out of his heart will flow rivers of living water. Isn't that wonderful? Come draw everlasting refreshment from me. Come, experience rivers of living water, the very life of God from me. Come to me, says Jesus, and you will never, ever thirst again. Are you going to trawl through the net? Are you going to wade through thousands of books? Are you going to die looking for the answers? Are you going to run out of time? Are you going to sort of hang on in quiet desperation? Says John, I've put down what you need to know. It's enough. It's enough to save you. It's enough to get you safely to heaven. Here's what you need. Hear the voice of Jesus. The most wonderful invitation from the loveliest of all beings, the one who is love himself. Ransack the world, you'll never meet anyone like Jesus Christ. He's here today. He's come tonight. And he speaks to you. If anyone, is that you? Covers everyone, doesn't it? If anyone thirsts, are you thirsty? Let him come to me and drink. He says, take my hand. Come home. Come to me.